You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber-supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well. First thing we do is kill all the lawyers. Yeah. I thought it was a prep.
What do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean?
A good start.
That's right.
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea to quote Shakespeare here because I'm doing this review with a bunch of actors, which, as we all know, are godless communists.
It's exactly true. Exactly the type of people that...
I prefer socialists.
The person who is the subject of what we're talking about tonight would throw away or preferably put into an electric chair.
Yeah, except when he wasn't having sex with them and doing blow in the bathroom at Club 54.
That's true.
Details. Yeah.
We are talking about the documentary Where's My Roy Cohn? This is by a documentarian, Matt Tiernauer, who actually I just reviewed on Digital Noise one of his movies recently about Studio 54, which, much like this one, was very interesting and very informative, and it gathered a lot of really good footage in a well arty almost sort of way, and yet somewhere along the line seemed to start dragging.
Yeah. I mean, there is a style to the modern documentary that I think this film kind of exemplifies. That doesn't stop it from being, I think, a very good, very, I'd almost say essential viewing. I'm not sure I'm ready to say that yet, but I'm leaning towards it. But yeah, you can definitely sell that this guy has a playbook and he's using it very well.
Before we go any further, I'm Chris.
I'm Marco.
Mindy.
Boat.
So here's ultimately the thing about this guy, Ray Cohn. Ray Kroc was what I was thinking of. Who was best known for being Joseph McCarthy's chief counsel during the communist hearings, amongst others, and went on to do lots of other nefarious, horrible shit, becoming gradually more the most evil man in fucking America.
Fair enough. He's like the chief lizard person of the last 50 years of American politics.
I wouldn't say chief, but pretty high up there,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, you know, of the Rigelians, you know, he was the one hiding in the background, I mean, pulling the strings.
Roy Cohn is surprisingly obscure by today's standards because I was tuning him out. But yes, he does that all the time. Sorry, cat hair attack. Roy Cohn is surprisingly obscure considering how connected he was. I mean, I've known about the guy for many, many years, and yet it seems like every 10, 15 years, some new project comes up and reminds us that he existed.
He was more of a New York phenomenon.
Yeah.
Even though, like, you know, this movie makes a very good case that he helped, you know, Reagan win his initial election in 1980. You know, that he was, you know, really walked in the corridors of power and influenced a lot of you know, dicey shit. But for the most part, most people knew of him because of the McCarthy hearings in the 50s, after which, you know, he didn't drop out of political life per se, but he never ran for public office again. He moved to, you know, he was in Washington. He went back to New York, which he is a native of, and he was just a mover and a shaker there and, you know, became more or less well-known or infamous for being a mob lawyer. Like, he was the...
Infamous. John Gotti's, more than famous.
Yeah. John Gotti's nickname was the Teflon Don because he was so hard to put behind bars. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons for that was Roy Cohn, who was, you know, this particularly vicious, assertive style of lawyer.
Right. Now, the goal of this film is ultimately to show how does this guy, who's so... obviously was breaking laws throughout his whole life, like big laws, stealing, working for the most evil people there were, and still gathered around him a coterie of like really famous, successful people, skated through these situations where the press would be at points openly calling him. We're like, we all know you're a liar. And he just whoosh, would skate on through. So you go, well, why is that relevant? Well, it's relevant because he was Donald Trump's personal lawyer and certainly the guy who groomed Donald Trump into being the person that exactly he is. Now, if you think that's just me talking from my own personal, like, feelings about Donald Trump, well, maybe you should actually see this movie.
Yeah, Trainwreck isn't subtle about that.
Have you ever heard The Legend of Darth Plagueis?
Yeah, exactly. It wants to really... I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to the biggest problem I have with this movie, though, is that it wants to set up this guy, not because we all think Roy Cohn's fascinating, but because the ways he did business and the way he became the person he was and as successful as he was and as evil as he was are exactly the things that Donald Trump did.
Right. Well, and there, he also, like, you know, the idea that in the 50s, somebody who was purely motivated by the need for power seemed a little bit more of an anomaly at that point, whereas now we kind of, you know, we've gotten so jaded that we're like, oh, well, this is, you know, there is a caliber of politician that is, like, you know,
his style has become the norm.
This is, yeah, that's his whole thing. I think the guy is, you know, as much as Trump is what Trump is, and this movie makes a great point of, you know, making Roy Cohn into that kingmaker, like, Mitch McConnell seems like a better match for this guy just because he doesn't seem to have any motivation other than pure power, and he relishes being a dick.
And I would not be shocked at all if there were real discernible ties between
just
him,
jump in,
Mitch McConnell.
I'm trying to be polite.
Sorry, you can't be polite.
You can't. Just stop them.
Well, I was going to say, you know, coming back to what you were saying, Chris, about trying to set up this guy as being this, you know, his legacy being Trump, I think that's where the documentary falls flat, is that it goes through, it sets up this premise of this guy's evil, which we all know. He was evil, he was a liar, he was a horrible, horrible human being who destroyed a lot of people in his wake. And so it just jumps from event to event to event, and sometimes back in time, and it, at least it felt to me, who has been spoiled by Robert Evans and Behind the Bastards, that there wasn't enough cohesion into how this guy became who he was, how he did things that then influenced society and then who promptly influenced him. It didn't feel like there was a build. It just felt like disconnected. This is an evil thing he did. This is an evil thing he did. The only time that it did feel that way was when he was talking about Trump, but I don't think that was the documentary. It was because we all have a very personal horror show that is our opinion of the dumpster fire that is the current presidency.
To be fair, I mean, the title gives it away. I mean, I was wondering myself walking in if he's going to build his case and eventually get to Donald Trump. And yet, within a minute, we see Donald Trump on screen. So it's very clear, even the name, you know, Where's my Roy Cohn? Now, this comes about because this was reported to have been said by Donald Trump during a meeting with Jeff Sessions, his then Secretary of,
Attorney General.
Attorney General. And he said, where's my Roy Cohn? And I listened to an interview with Trey Nauer not too long ago, and he said that phrase was not a question, it was a demand. And when I heard that reported in the news, I immediately knew who they were talking about. What's more, I knew what they were talking about. And we live in a terrifying time where, at least for a brief while, Jeff Sessions was the thin blue line between total fascism. I never thought I'd see that day.
A tiny, petite blue line.
Yes.
Yeah, very, but you're implying that in order to watch this documentary and truly understand its power, you have to already know about this stuff. And
okay.
I don't think that's...
So I think the problem is, to some degree, you're asking yourself, so I get what you're saying, this guy was evil, people should know about him, but what makes us worthy to make a theatrical release film?
Right.
What does make it worthy is the Donald Trump stuff, and yet the movie acts all demure about the connection.
Right.
It clearly is its reason for existence.
Of course.
And yet, it only spends a small part of the movie actually directly drawing the connection. The rest of the film doesn't say it. It just winks so broadly that you could actually hear the sound of its eyelashes
inches
slamming
towards
shut.
The jugular vein, and by the time it gets there, it's so exhausted, it's just like, it makes a tiny little...
You also have to understand
that
Cohn died in 1986.
Right.
So a lot of what Trump is now, and he's one of the few people I know who's like, vocabulary has decreased over the time. I mean, he actually sounds dumber than he did back then.
Oh yeah,
And I think that's
dumber than he did in 2015.
I think. I mean, he almost. True. If you look at correspondence or listen to him, he could put together a cogent sentence when he felt like it. And I don't know if that's he's out of practice or there's something else going on. But I think part of the reason we have to go into this is because we see that he had Cohn. I mean. Had so many connection points to all these other things going on beyond Donald Trump. I have no doubt that if he had not died in 1986 from AIDS, which, by the way, he was a homosexual who denied it, and a self-loathing Jew, too. He's a great guy, this Roy Cohn. But I think if he had survived, we might be seeing him on the news more often today.
Oh, no question, because he couldn't stand to not be. No. He didn't care if he was the one being attacked. I mean, they even said at one point, the one guy's like talking head is like, I think one of the greatest moments of his life is the first time he got indicted because he got to be on camera more.
Yeah.
I mean, he loved it. And his whole strategy was, and we've all known people in our personal lives who do this too, where you're like, hey, did you do that thing? And they're like, yeah, well, what about the time you did this?
Yes.
That was like the bulk of his strategy.
Attack the person attacking you. Punch back. Punch harder. Lie if you have to. Deny everything. Admit nothing.
I mean, when they go through the – it really goes through the list psychologically of like how this guy did what he did, really getting into the techniques that he used. And you can't not see that they're talking about Donald Trump, who clearly is the same things. It emphasizes that he taught Donald Trump everything that he knows. Yeah. And like – And we watch this, and I'm like,
well, let's not put it past Donald Trump for having a lot of sleaziness built in from his dad.
Well, no, he would have a lot of sleaziness built in just to want to have Roy Cohn be his mentor
when he engages Roy Cohn, he's doing it to get out of the situation where, you know, he and his dad were refusing people of color to live in their housing developments. And he was like, you know, I've talked to every reputable lawyer in town. I mean, this is practically verbatim. I talked to every reputable lawyer in town. They don't seem to be able to do anything. But I hear you're a real son of a bitch. Come work for me.
Yeah, and he's constantly like, it doesn't matter. Do whatever you have to do. I don't care what it is. There are no rules when you're trying to do stuff that you want to accomplish, whether it's for legal reasons or anything else. And he lived his whole life that way.
He'd be so tired of winning.
And pointedly would all but admit it. The fact that he's like, yeah, I'd do whatever it fucking takes to get what I want done.
And then, I mean, we've been focusing a lot on his influence on Trump, and that's part of the documentary and how minimal it was. But also, even if you didn't focus on that, there was still the story of his connection to the gay community and how he, from the McCarthy trials, because a lot of people don't realize the McCarthy trials also went after homosexuals.
The Lavender Scare.
Yep.
Jesus.
And that's exactly
it. It's in stereo.
And how, you know, that and how that utterly just destroyed people's lives.
Yeah.
And then, you know, during Reagan, and how there was just such this blatant disregard, and it's like, well, you're bad people, so you should die of AIDS anyway, while being a closeted homosexual. And the thing that drove me nuts was, like, one of the talking heads was his former boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
More than one.
Okay.
Yeah, there was another guy later, they were like, yeah, he also dated him.
Oh, okay. But yeah, so you have people who dated him, and so knew this dichotomy. And yet there was nothing in from these points of view about how he felt being in this relationship where it's like, you have actively tried to destroy us, and yet I'm
the people.
They were paying him.
Well, I don't think he would have the self-awareness because, I mean, he has asked point blank at many times. He's just like, no, I'm not a homosexual, and I don't care. And I don't think he thought he was homosexual. He's kind of on the record, which I think it's one of the you know, kind of highlighted in Angels in America, where he's like, I'm not gay. Sometimes I fuck men.
Yeah. I mean, that was
the
description.
Certainly did.
No, but that was, you're saying the boyfriend, and I agree.
And it's just should have had a much more personalized point of view from these guys about what that journey was and being a part of that horrifying train wreck that he treated.
Other people who were interviewed who are calling him
out. So long as they were getting paid, they didn't care.
There are other people in there, a lot of the talking heads are like, yeah, I worked with him, he was my friend, we did all this stuff together, he made me lots of money, who are flat out saying, no, he was evil as shit.
Yeah.
And not once does the documentary turn the like that eye on them and say,
what does that make you?
What does that make
exactly.
you? And I kept waiting for these people who are being
really
interviewed.
There's really only two or three people in this that are just like, fuck that guy, fuck everything about him. Like, the main guy is
one of
them
is his cousin.
Yeah, and the guy who basically headed up the team that got him eventually disbarred, like, right before he died, he was finally disbarred, and that he was the only guy who was just like, he was practically tearing his hair out, going, like, I don't understand.
Everybody knows
this
he's
motherfucker
guilty.
Got away with this for so long. Yeah. Holy shit, he's so patently full of shit.
Right. Yeah, but everybody owed him a favor, and so on and so forth, so people look the other way. And, you know, he was able to ride that forever. And by the end, it all falls apart. I mean, he's disbarred. He's broke. He's flat out dying of AIDS, even though he's denying it over and over and over again. And he finds out, as everybody in transactional relationships eventually figure out, that once you have nothing left to offer, they just leave. Now you're a pariah. You're dying of a plague that no one understands. Can you imagine a world-famous germaphobe like Donald Trump wanting to come and hang out with a guy dying of AIDS in the 80s? Wasn't going to happen. And furthermore, he was disbarred. So that whole I'm the high-powered attorney everybody wants, at that point he was of no use to anybody. It would almost be tragic, except it kind of couldn't have happened to a worse person.
Yeah.
But then he never admitted that, and the documentary never focuses on that really either, about how being a pariah affected him. So it's just like, even that was kind of anticlimactic.
I think it affected him in that it filled him with terror, and
but
he
you're
didn't
guessing.
Want it. Well, you know, you're right.
Well,
I am.
I don't think you're going to ever get any. I mean, the man spent his entire life in the deepest waters of denial that you could ever find. I mean, he denied his heritage, he denied his family, he denied his sexuality.
I mean, he was even a registered Democrat who worked for no one but Republicans.
No one but the far right. And it's just like, this is not a man who has lived a self-examined life. He's like, I get horny and so I'll go fuck men. Are you gay? Nope.
Nope.
You know, it's just there's nothing, there's no depth here. He really is kind of a lizard brain person, you know, that is motivated completely by desire for, you know, power and to some degree, I think, respect and fame. But, you
infamy,
know, as far as him going, like, you know, I think it's the opening line of this whole thing is an interviewer asking him, what makes Roy Cohn tick? And he never answers it.
No. I think if Roy Cohn hadn't ended up having a legal degree, he would have been a serial killer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, no, there's, like, deep signs of psychopathy.
I mean, and this ties back to Trump again. I mean, it's like, at some point, people are like, what's making this guy tick? What's going through his mind? Nothing. There's no there.
Charles Manson on his deathbed wasn't going like, you know, maybe I shouldn't have told those girls to go kill all those people.
Yeah. He's like, I've got power. I've got a hot wife. I got, like, you know, kids from three generations. I'm the president of the United States. I've got a fucking toilet plated in gold. That kind of person does not self-reflect because they are exactly what they want to be, which is the actual mystery of Donald Trump revealed right there.
I mean, and like
because
people
want to be him.
That's the most interesting thing here is just the parts where they explain the psychopathy of Donald Trump through Roy Cohn, of saying,
which is
these things
doing.
That Roy Cohn are doing are the mental processes that the president is doing.
But then they could have done that, and they did it for 2 seconds, which I really wanted to know more
about,
was about Roy Cohn and talking about his mom. And it's like 2 seconds they talk about how she was utterly apathetic and how that affected him. And it's like, no, go back to that so that we find out how this made this guy tick, which in turn made this guy tick. I wanted correlations, and it didn't really give me any.
At the same time, there was a point I just felt exhausted hearing about Roy Cohn. I'm like, he is an unrepentant bastard. There is no side of him that is soft and cuddly. You know, there's no, I mean, they said even Hitler loved his dogs.
Yeah.
Roy Cohn loved no one. Like, he is just an unrepentant piece of human garbage and excrement. And there's nothing in this to give you any feeling otherwise. And it gets exhausting. Watching.
Well, yeah, he is exhausting. You gotta stare into his dead eyes for over 2 hours.
Drinky dog.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Bo, start us out.
So, you know, I think this is a very interesting instructional piece. I wish people would see it just because I don't think enough people know who Roy Cohn is, and I don't think enough people know of his, you know, ties to Trump. But, you know, since I'm a very pessimistic person, I'm like, nobody who needs to see this is going to see it.
They'll just say it's fake news.
That being said, there's almost the film seems a bit pedantic in ways, and that it's just like it's 2 hours, and they try to build this case, but then you know when it's time to sum it all up for the jury, they don't really go for the throat, and you know it's just like I might tell this director, you know, who you should be a little more like. Roy Cohn. When going after Roy Cohn, perhaps one should be a bit Roy Cohn-ish.
Fight fire with fire.
Yes. Fight Dickory with Dickory. There were just points at this film, and I'm just like, man, if you're making a documentary film nowadays and it's over an hour and a half, maybe you should consider going the Ken Burns route and just making a little miniseries. So this was... A little too long for what it's offering. There's not really a good framing device here. And yeah, I think Mindy makes a great point in the fact that they don't really do a deep dive into, you know, what was this guy's fucking, you know, inciting incident? Was there anything that motivated him other than just, fuck you, I want power? And I personally think that's it. But, you know, it would have... You know, maybe you could have gone down a different line and seen something like that and given us something a little bit more thoughtful as opposed to going towards this end that ultimately you don't fulfill very well. So, you know, that's sad but true. I think this is a very informative piece, but I'm not going to say it's very entertaining, and that's sad because more people could stand to watch it and just to know the fucking facts. I give it 6 sad toy frogs. And holy shit, that's a mind.
Really, I was kind of jealous of his stuffed frog collection.
I had a frog collection as a child. It irked me out.
Mindy, what about you? What do you think?
I agree with Bo in that I think it would have been better if it were a miniseries. Because one of the big problems, like I said, I have been spoiled by Behind the Bastards, which the formula of it is this person was born, these are the influence that made them who they were, they went out and did this, it changed society, society made them do this, etc. until they died, and this is the influence that they left. I mean... And it builds as to this became this, became this, became this. And I love history and learning about people because of that. This documentary, it felt very disjointed because I think it was the time constraint of, okay, we got to fit all of this crap in. So it was like, here's an event. Okay, now here's another one. Now here's another one. And it didn't feel like they explored why they happened, how that affected the society, how that in turn affected how he did things. And so it was just, it started out as, this guy's an evil person. Yep, he's still an evil person. The end. And it was very unfulfilling as to why am I watching this? Because when you watch something like this, the reason you do is because it's important to understand why. And so... So, yeah, I think if it were a documentary, if it focused on more the human side as to who he was and who he was, his relationships were on a personal level, which they totally flubbed, in my opinion, it would have been much more engaging. It wouldn't have dragged because you now had a human element in it. And that's what I think it really lacked. It needed that human element, human in quotes, because it is Roy Cohn. So, I guess I will give it... 5 droopy dog eyes out of 10.
Marco?
I've said it before, I'll say it again. When it comes to documentaries, I have 2 criteria. One is the form, and in this regard, this ain't nothing you haven't seen before, but I also have to consider it in terms of just the information. You're right in that it doesn't really go that much into why, but I think sometimes what's more important is the what. And a lot of people don't know about this story. They don't know about this guy and how he has had an impact
how his a guy who's been dead for 30 years now, how he's had a ripple effect that is affecting all of us today. It's almost like Roy Cohn fired a bullet that he didn't live long enough to see hit the target. But the rest of us who are still alive, we have to watch in horror as it comes ever closer inexorably towards us. And the greater fear is that it's actually just going to go through us, and that bullet is just going to keep flying into history for a long time. And he's unleashed something that we see in our culture today, a divisiveness, an anger, an unwillingness to yield to facts, opinions, a bullying tactic that only puts winning above everything else. And so you end up with a society of people who are fucking psychopaths, and they don't even know it, which is the appeal of Donald Trump. It keeps me up at night knowing that the reason this man won is because people go, oh my God, you know, this is the thing that's going to get him to lose his base. No, they love him all the more, because the reality is people want to be Donald Trump. That to me is frightening. Not that he's a psychopath, but that there are people who like psychopathy. They like a lack of empathy. They love the cruelty. That is the point, as they say. So for me, in that regards, I have to weigh this film a little bit more highly, because I do think people need to know more about this. But I agree with Bo. The motherfuckers who need to know, they ain't going to know. So I am going to give this 7.5 questionable trips to Europe with your secretary out of 10.
You know, I'm glad, Mindy, that you brought up Behind the Bastards, because that also is one of my favorite new podcasts
I've
discovered.
Me too.
I'm obsessed.
Robert Evans, I want either some Doritos or throwing bagels.
By the way, that's not the
I'm hot, a three, yes.
That's not the
not
hot
Bob
tub.
Evans.
Not
bad,
Bob Evans. Yeah, it's no, not the
not he of neckerchief chip fame.
Do the Darren Keaton one.
You know what Diane Keaton's pussy tastes like after it's been soaking in apple cider all day?
It's
and I'm Buck Rogers. It's just a diver's watch.
It's a Patton Oswalt bit.
Back in the days when we were filming The Godfather, I had a hot tub filled with apple cider.
No, but our point being is, like, I think it's important to explore the worst people. Certainly. But there's definitely something, opposed to listening to a straight audio podcast, or I do while I'm working, or in the car, as opposed to something that demands all your attention, a full-length movie, where I'm going, guys, you've got to give me some sort of bigger point than just this is this guy's story, because why is this relevant right now? And as I said, and I know I keep harping on this, it just teases enough why it's relevant, but then is coy about the whole fucking thing. I don't want to see more of the emotional background of Roy Cohn. I don't care.
Yeah.
Fuck this piece of shit. I don't care. The reason he did what he did, because he's a fucking psychopath. I don't need a hell of a lot more than that. What I would have liked to see was the filmmaker trying to get culpability from a lot of the talking heads. So on that emotional level, there's nothing there. I'm like, you've got all these people that are, I mean, like, we watch Gore Vidal in interviews just laying into Cohn in later day interviews. And I'm like, so the filmmaker learned nothing from watching Vidal's, like, clip that he uses again and again during it. Like, let these people towards the end ask, you've got to get into them and say, how do you feel now about being culpable about being part of all this? And he never does. So there is no real emotional content going on in this film. It's very dry, which would be fine if, once again, the first half of this film was the story of Roy Cohn. The second half of the film was about, here's why American politics are the way they are today in terms of the way he did things being a huge influence on multiple people. And I'm very certain that if you were to read a straight-up biography, you would find he had a lot more ties to other modern-day politicians than just Donald Trump. And it feels like a half-baked idea here. At the end, I was like, so, I mean, it's interesting the insight you gave me as to Donald Trump, but that's just one guy, and clearly this guy had ties to almost everyone. I think the only reason to make this documentary is to talk about that, and it barely toys with it, which I think is a shame. It's not that it's a terribly made documentary, it's just loses sight of what its point of existence is in the first place. I'm going to give this 5 out of 10 gold toilets. As you do. What do you think he really has a gold toilet, by the way, or is that just an urban legend?
I think it's an urban legend, but there was an artist it was like some museum. Trump wanted to get some artwork, and the artist was like, no, you don't get that, but I'm willing to give you this gold toilet named America.